Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
And welcome to Onceable, episode 76. We'll be discussing Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 7, Nimue. And I'm Karen, and today I'm joined by Laura and Kristen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Brittany and Jen are still having crazy lives right now, so we've kind of taken to doing this with the skeleton crew, but hopefully they'll be back, probably not until after the hiatus, but hopefully you guys like us enough to stick around, and I think we can still have a pretty good discussion with just three of us, because we all like different aspects of the show, which is always a great thing.
And this episode was kind of nuts.
It was kind of nuts. Yeah. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, please hit us up on Twitter at Onceable or this post on Hypeable.com. We check the comments and we're starting this week to read out feedback and everything. So please keep leaving those and we will be happy to read those out and answer your questions or discuss your comments. So let's start with the instant reaction. Laura, thumbs up or thumbs down?
It was a thumbs up for me. It wasn't like my most favorite episode ever, but I definitely liked it. It was a thumbs up. I felt like it had good pace. It advanced the storyline. Yeah, I really liked it.
Kristen?
Definitely a thumbs up for me. Again, probably not my most favorite of the entire series, but I really liked all the twists and turns, and it kept me guessing because I thought I knew what was going to happen next, and it definitely wasn't what I thought was going to happen. So,
yeah, I feel about the same way. Definitely thumbs up. Not a spectacular episode, but definitely a solid one. And there were a couple of twists that I was like, oh, I definitely thought this was going to go in the opposite direction. So after 5 seasons, if Once Upon a Time can still do that to us, then they're definitely still doing something right.
Most definitely.
So let's get into favorite quotes. Kristen, do you want to go first?
Absolutely. Mine comes from Regina. And she looks at Hook and she says, "Tell your timbers to stop shivering, pirate." I'm sorry, but I love wordplay. And that is some fabulous wordplay from the queen of words. Like, she always just nails it. And yeah, yet again. Love her.
Her puns. Like, I wonder if she just sits up at night, like, writing these down. Like, oh, man, I have to use this one tomorrow. It's so good.
Well, and, like, I don't know if they have someone who, like, writes Regina more often than other writers, because she always nails it. Like, she's so much
point. Yeah. Lana Priya just has great timing. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I wonder if they have, like, a writer who's, like, you know, we need a Regina one-liner. You. You are our go-to, because they always nail it. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you are charged with the puns this week. And some shows do that. Some shows definitely have, like, one person that typically writes a few characters. So I would be interested to know if they do that and who it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Laura, what about your quote?
My favorite quote was from Merlin, and I really liked when he said, "It's easier to live with the darkest, It's easier to live with the darkness if you can dress it up as vengeance." And I thought that was so completely true on many, many levels and many, many shows, especially since I'm a Doctor Who fan, and this week's Doctor Who episode, like, that could totally have cross applied to this week's Doctor Who episode. And I thought, wow, that was, like, really awesome. So I just, you know, people do a lot of, you know, things to sort of twist motives. And I thought that's a really great way of twisting, you know, what is going to make something right. You know, it's about vengeance. It's about for me getting what I think is owed to me rather than what may be the right thing to do. So I really liked that quote.
And it works with so many characters on Once Upon a Time,
Oh.
especially the earlier Regina and Rumple. You know, that could easily apply to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not disagree on that. Yeah.
Mine is between Merlin and Emma too, and it's when Merlin tells Emma, you know, how does it feel to have done the right thing and to be walking down the right path? And Emma just goes, "To be honest, Merlin, it feels damn good." And it was such like a fist pump moment that, you know, because you're a little worried about Emma at that time. You're like, what's she gonna do? Because we know how she ends up. Is this the moment that she's going to end up with the darkness? And she beats it momentarily. And just the pride she has in herself for taking the right path, even though it was harder, was just really nice to see. And you could see it on her face how good she felt there.
Oh yeah, Emma was feeling it. Like, for she's been drowning and, you know, trying to fight the darkness off, and in that moment, you could tell she was like, "Okay, I can do this. Like, I can defeat this. I'm gonna get past this." Like, you know, you could just see it in her
Right.
face.
Well, I liked
Love
it too
that.
because I felt like it was almost like a Emma Swan wearing her red like leather jacket kind of moment. You know what I mean?
Oh
Like
yeah.
it was just so I was just getting ready for Emma to say, "Get rid of this. I want my jeans and my red leather jacket." Like it was so like modern Emma, and I felt like we haven't seen modern Emma in a way since we've been in this new world. And even like the other characters too, like I think there's kind of sort of almost a difference between like David and Mary Margaret when they're in period dress versus modern dress. And I just feel there is like a little bit of a subtle difference between the characters when they're in sort of that fairy tale-ish kind of setting versus who they are if they have a modern persona in Storybrooke. Like I think there's a real difference, and for me I felt like this was Emma being more like modern day Storybrooke Emma than like Emma trapped in the fantasy world and kind of lost.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, something I noticed particularly in this episode during that moment when she's with Merlin, I think it was after their quest was sort of fulfilled. Emma talks differently, and it's subtle because she doesn't use old language necessarily like Arthur would because he grew up in that time period. But I don't know if it's that kind of old dark magic inside of her that changes her a little bit,
Yeah,
but
like it's less slang, like less slangy and more like proper
formal.
words. Yeah, exactly.
I definitely noticed that. But when she was getting angry and she was like, "No, I'm gonna do this," like, yeah, I definitely understand what you mean by seeing like the modern Emma in there. All right, so let's talk about Merlin's backstory. Brittany would once again like to mention how Merlin is still super hot. I totally agree with that. Although apparently Kristen has a thing for Arthur. I learned that tonight.
He's pretty, and he has really, really pretty eyes, okay? I have said this from the beginning. Like, before, I mean, he might be evil and awful, but that doesn't make him less pretty. You can be pretty and evil. And I just, every time he's on screen, I'm like, damn. So,
He
you know.
just doesn't do anything for me, but I'm convinced it's because I'm still bitter.
Yeah, Karen's still mad at the Arthur twist, and she just can't look past it at this point. Oh, but it's okay. Arthur is hot too, or Merlin's hot too, so it's, you know,
Yeah.
it's all good.
Did you just accidentally use the Merlin ship name?
Yeah, I think I did.
Merthur.
Ah, that's great.
Just Freudian
Nice.
slip, I guess. I
Yeah.
don't know.
Well, let's talk about Merlin because we do get to see his backstory. We learned that it's not like he was born with magic. He found it essentially because he found the Holy Grail. And before we get into what that necessarily means with this story, what do we know about the Holy Grail in legend? Like, because to tell you the complete truth, I don't really know anything about it. Like, I know that it's hard to find. But other
Well,
than that,
yeah. Well, I
what's
mean,
its purpose?
most Arthurian legend is all based around Holy Grail mythology. Usually, like Arthur and his knights, after they like save England, like what his knights of the Round Table go questing for is to find the Holy Grail, which is supposed to be, and this starts getting a little weird when you start mixing Christian mythology into like fairy tale. I mean, I find it gets a little funky and a little weird personally, but in any case, the Holy Grail is supposed to be the cup that Jesus drank from at the Last Supper, which was then supposedly kept, and then various people at crusades went to try to find it, and it's lost or it's not lost, and it's one of those things from legends. It was the same thing during the crusades. One of the things that the crusaders tried to find was the true cross, meaning the cross that Jesus was crucified on. Like it all kind of ties into the same sort of thing. And if you were to touch such an object, perhaps a miracle could be performed to heal you or to grant you life. I mean, it's all, it kind of depends upon what source you're in as to what this Holy Grail can do. I mean, if you even take it into modern movies, I mean, the whole Indiana Jones series, the first Indiana Jones series was all about finding the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you've seen Indiana Jones, the other thing about the Holy Grail is that if you drink from it and are not worthy of it, it will destroy you, which is what happened to the first guy tonight on the show. And it also happens in Indiana Jones if you've ever seen the movie. So, like, you have to be worthy of the honor of drinking from the Holy Grail. Other words, that's why people have searched for it, is that it can perform miracles, but if you are not worthy of it, then it can have disastrous
Right.
implications.
Like in Arthurian legend, it's, if I'm not wrong, someone will tell me in our comments, but I believe it was Galahad who was able to go get the Holy Grail after many others had tried and failed in a number of ways, because Galahad was the one with the truest and the purest of hearts versus other people who had all kinds of ulterior motives or were not like this very pure and like highest form of knight kind of person you could be. I mean, I think in this, Merlin is spared because he kind of, even as they're wandering through that desert thing, he's like, hey, don't give up, we're going to keep going. And before he presumes to drink from the cup, he kind of like humbles himself to like a higher power, and then he drinks it. So like he's not expecting anything. So it's all kind of like very once upon a timey-ish kind of mixing little elements of all these mythologies and into creating what they created.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing here, as you said, is that he asks permission to drink from the cup. And I think the fact that he has that humility is what allows him to drink from it, survive, and then gain the magic, which makes him extremely powerful. And he becomes immortal, but it comes with a cost because he sort of knows, he's lived for hundreds of years and he's loved and lost, and maybe hasn't loved like he loved Nimue, but he's cared about people and then had to watch them grow old and die. And that's just sort of the curse of his power. And you feel bad for him because he uses this magic for good. He doesn't let it corrupt him, and yet he's still sort of cursed in a way, and I think that it's just another way that Once Upon a Time is showing the burden of power. And some people, succumb to that power and grow bitter about it and kind of use it to their advantage, but Merlin never did that.
No. The other thing that I thought was interesting too, like my husband is a Arthurian legend like freak. Like he's so totally into it and very much loves The Once and Future King, which is I think T.S. White wrote that. And then The Once and Future King is what they basically based the musical Camelot on. And it's also to a degree-ish what they based the Disney Camelot movie that I guess they made in the 1950s on, when my husband used to like watching Once Upon a Time with me. He kind of less liked it as it was like Frozen and Merida. He started referring to it as the Disney commercial. When I tell you the man got caps locks of rage angry on the whole Merlin thing, like usually it's just kind of sarcastic comments of, oh, it's the Frozen commercial, or oh, it's that Merida commercial. He w like I couldn't watch it with him. Like I was like, okay, I'll turn it off. I mean, he literally, this is a quote, literally, I'm not even making this up. And Karen, you have met Kevin, or actually, you both have met Kevin. He literally said to me, he goes, I would rather watch hardcore porn than watch this now. I was like, okay, then. And that's not really, you know, something we do here in our household. You know, just not to put too fine a point on it. And we're a kind of sort of PG-13-ish podcast. I was like, okay, so you're, yes, you are. All right, opinion duly noted. So I'm just curious if there are any other like Arthurian legend purists out there who are like rage angry with the whole Merlin and Arthur and Guinevere storyline. You know, I don't know. I think part of it is they introduced Lancelot so many seasons back that they kind of painted themselves in a corner as to where they could go with the storyline. So maybe that's it, but my husband is very unhappy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I can understand that because I, even though I don't really have a lot of connection or feelings about Arthur, like, I mean, I'm vaguely aware of the story and that's about it. But I feel like at this point, it's going to be so hard to redeem him. And it's making me wonder if they will redeem him. And if they don't redeem him, what is that kind of saying about the story? Because Arthur is always painted as this almost godlike savior. And the fact that they're making him not necessarily evil, but so incredibly misguided that it doesn't even feel like the same character is
Right.
interesting, to
Yeah. I
put it
mean,
nicely.
yeah. I mean, like Arthur's fatal flaw, some of it, well, depending again, what legend you're listening to, is that he didn't have Merlin around to get in his ear and help him with certain things after he got a certain point. And part of his other flaw is believing the best in people or trying to give people too many second chances, you know, almost being like too altruistic and not looking at big. You know, big picture and situations, and you know, and I agree, it's not like our current Arthur at all. He's very conniving, and that's just, I don't feel that's really Arthur.
Yeah,
I
he's
have to say, in tonight's episode, I started to kind of see where Arthur is, like how he sees himself as being in the right. Like his little confrontation with Merlin, while we are not happy about it because he's teamed up with Xelena of all people, like the way he was talking to Merlin and the stuff he kept saying, he was like, you prophesied that I would be this guy, and I expected to be this guy, and I've had to do all of this without you. And, how am I supposed to be what you told me to be without your help? Like, he almost tonight almost seemed like desperate enough to get Merlin's attention. Like, I need you to see that I need your help. Like, I can't do this alone, and you left me to do this alone. And then when Merlin kind of tells him, like, you can be, like, you will be, that's still to be, Arthur. It almost like, and I don't think anything changed in Arthur, but I kind of started to see that he's not necessarily out to do bad things or be evil, but he just feels like he was abandoned to be with this great person all on his own, and he didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's desperate right now, like you said, and it's kind of making him go a little crazy pants, which I guess we can't really blame him for, but it's still unfortunate that they had to use Arthur for that storyline. Which we'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about the confrontation between Merlin and Arthur, because that was pretty interesting. But one of the minor notes of this storyline as well is that we see the apprentice when he's a little boy, and I thought that was cute. And I want to know more about him because we've seen him at these two extremes in his life, when he's a little boy, when he's helping Merlin, and when he's much older and he's sort of not, well, he wasn't around Merlin anymore because Merlin was stuck in the tree. And I just want to know, he must have such an interesting life and so many stories to tell.
Yeah, it was cute. I liked it. I thought it was like, oh, there he is. I really enjoyed that aspect.
And of course, then we meet Nimue, and Merlin cannot read her. He doesn't know what her future holds. And Brittany is speculating that it's because she perhaps ultimately wants something dark. But I'm not sure I agree with that just because I feel like Merlin would be able to tell when people want something dark. I wonder if it's almost like it's like a mirror. They've both eventually Nimue will drink from the cup, and they both have the same sort of power in themselves. So it's like Merlin, you know how usually in stories like this, like you can't see your own future. It's almost like
Right.
Merlin can't see the future of somebody else who has had a drink from the cup.
I felt like it was also very like somebody who could easily very much intertwine with your own timeline, that it was because she was going to be like his first true love or whatever, and because of that, he was not able to see where their paths connected or diverged or whatever. That's how I kind of interpreted it.
Yeah, I just kind of assumed that something down the line was going to like affect his story just as much as hers. And again, with Karen, like you can't see your own future. Like I assumed that had something to do with it. So yeah.
And we learned that Merlin is quite the romantic, and he's willing to give up everything in order to be with her. He's willing to give up his magic, he's willing to give up his immortality because he just wants to grow old with her. And you know, normally I would maybe roll my eyes at storylines like this because let's be real, it's been done before in a lot of different ways. But what I thought was interesting here was Merlin's line about if, you know, there are certain moments in life that are so special that they're like diamonds. And when you live forever, you see a lot of diamonds and they sort of lose their value. And I think he was kind of getting tired of just coming and going when everyone else continues to leave. And life didn't necessarily hold that preciousness for him anymore. And when you lose that preciousness, it's sort of like, well, what's the point?
Right. I'm also was kind of, I mean, for me, I liked how they kind of put Nimue back to being a nemesis of Merlin's, because in the Arthurian legend, Nimue is the one who kind of enchants Merlin and causes him to lose his memory and to for him to fall out of Arthur's life. So I liked that Nimue was not going to be un-Nimue like, in a sense. In the other hand, too, the thing that I was kind of curious with is, so she managed to drink from the cup. So she must have had like a pure heart for like 32 seconds there. And
Exactly.
then right after, it wasn't. Like, so I'm wondering if she just wanted to very quickly be immortal with him, and then after that, it was like, okay, so things went downhill and this is what we did from there. Like, I'm just curious, like, how we went from pure to unpure so quickly.
I was gonna say maybe the cup could read that the reason she wanted to drink from the cup was to was to have the power to be with Merlin. Like, rather than wanting the power for her own means for some crazy psycho thing, the only reason she wanted to drink from it was to be his equal so that they could be together.
Yeah, and I felt like it probably was that at first, but she just managed to really get that like in before like there were other motivations in play.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Merlin could have easily turned into the Dark One as well. You know, it's just a matter of holding off that power enough that you realize, okay, I need to have good intentions with this because I could very easily go dark, but I'm choosing not to. And I think that some people can hold that power inside of themselves more easily than others can. And it doesn't necessarily make Nimue a bad person, which is hilarious given that she's, you know, the first Dark One. But I think that even the best of people can become corrupted sometimes if they lose their way. And some people just can't handle all of that power. But let's break down Nimue's backstory a little bit because we learned that A dude named Vortigern, who is the guy in the mask, burns down her village. And Merlin and Nimue take a field trip there. And they find out that Vortigern's looking for the Grail. And they decide that they're going to take the Grail to Prometheus's fire, which I will exclaim about in 2 seconds, as you knew I would. And they take the Grail there because they want to melt it down, turn it into a sword so that they can cast the power out of Merlin so that he could become mortal again. And you could tell from the beginning that Nimue was like, yeah, but what if I become mortal? And Merlin's like, no, you know, it's too much power. Like, you have to live with a lot of terrible things. And I liked that Nimue was good, but she kind of was like the other side of the argument. Like, she was the devil's advocate to Merlin. Like, Merlin had the life experience to know that it wasn't a good idea to have all the power that he had, whereas Nimue kind of was naive about it and was like, yeah, but, you know, we could live forever, we could do so much good together. She seemed almost too pure in the beginning and not quite as experienced enough to be able to hold that power. Nothing. That's it. Just let me talk.
I mean, basically, yeah. When the first time he sees her, she wants revenge, but her version of revenge is to keep these flowers alive.
Exactly.
And to continue, like, she's not bloodthirsty at first. So, yeah, she is, you know, naive and pure enough of heart that, you know, I think even Merlin recognized that she, if given the power or the opportunity for that power, she might not know how to handle it or what to do with it. So his instinct is, I want to be mortal. Let's not turn her immortal. Like, that's not going to solve anything. And I've already been there, done that. And this whole immortal thing is not as glamorous as you might think.
Right, exactly. Now, okay, so we learned in the last episode that they were going to find the original spark, the original fire. And I was like, yeah, it could be Prometheus. And I was so excited. Well, they name drop Prometheus in this episode. So let's be real. Yes, I'm saying it again. We need Hades. When is Hades coming? I mean, at this point, like, somebody's got to show up, right? We've had all of these Greek mythological creatures and references that somebody has to come, whether it's Hades, whether it's Hercules, they've got to do it for us.
Yeah, Karen Greeks out on a weekly basis now and is just waiting for them to just full-blown drop all of the Greek mythology fun in her lap. And there's definitely something coming. They're leading to it. They're dropping little bits of Greek here and Greek there and kind of leading us down the path, and we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, I mean, we still have quite a long ways before this season is over. And unlike the last few seasons of Once Upon a Time, they're not going to be breaking it up into kind of like A plot, B plot with two different separate storylines. This is kind of going to be like one big plot. And it makes me wonder if, you know, we will get it this season. I would love a whole season focused on Greek mythology, but of course I would. So I guess I would be content with them just kind of throwing in a few episodes of some of the characters that will fit into the storyline, because at this point they've paved the road. They just need to bring the characters in.
Well, and I kind of really like the marriage of the Arthurian legend with some of the Greek mythology stuff. Like,
it
I think
makes
they,
a lot of sense.
Yeah, they work together really well. And if you were to try and tie too much of the fairy tale stuff into it, I think you might, you know, you might get some issues. Like, they've tied Frankenstein successfully before and Wizard of Oz, but, you know, it gets a little bit more wonky the less realistic it gets. So I'm liking how they're merging them right now. And I'm hoping that, yeah, as the year goes on, we'll get like maybe a little more Greek and a little less Arthur. Like right now we're in Camelot dealing with little tidbits of Greek, so maybe later on that'll kind of flip and it we'll get more of the Greek stuff, and then the Arthur will just be in, it'll inform it rather than being the focus of it.
Right. I mean, it does feel like this whole Arthur story is kind of coming to a head. We finally got in a bit of confrontation between Arthur and Merlin. So I wonder how much more they're going to lengthen this plot or if we're going to slowly move into something else. But speaking of Nimue, back to her. She is quote unquote killed by Vortigern. And it turns out that, like we said, she drinks from the cup and she's not really dead, and she pulls out his heart. And it's in the palm of her hand, and Merlin is telling her, you cannot crush his heart because it will send you down a path that you can't come back from. And she does it anyway, and she becomes the first Dark One. And as Brittany points out in our doc, this is the beginning of choosing power over love. And I really enjoyed the fact that Merlin did not create the Dark One, which I thought is what was going to happen. She created herself. She chose that path and therefore chose to become the Dark One, who is essentially the complete opposite of Merlin, where Merlin walks a path of light. The Dark One obviously walks the path of the dark. So, did you guys see this coming, or was this one of the twists in the episode that you didn't see and really enjoyed?
This was definitely a twist for me. I as we were watching the episode, I looked at Karen and said, "Oh my God, Merlin is totally about to run her through with the Dark One dagger and turn her with Excalibur and turn her into the first Dark One." And oh my God, like I thought all of this stuff was gonna happen, and then literally it comes back from commercial, and she's holding that heart in her hand like 2 seconds later, and I'm like, or that could happen. Like, it was not what I had thought. It's still like I still kind of thought Nimue was going to end up the first Dark One, but it definitely didn't happen as I thought it was going to.
And of course, earlier in the season, we saw Merlin confront the Dark One saying that you took my love from me. And of course, we all thought that they were two different people. Now that we learned, Merlin doesn't see the Dark One as Nimue. Nimue is still somebody different, and yet the Dark One still took her from him. So, Laura, what did you think about that?
I was okay with that. I mean, I don't feel like the Dark One took her. I think she made the choice to go that path. So I don't feel like it. I think what I do kind of like, and I think Once Upon a Time plays with this very frequently, is it was a matter of free will. Like she chose that path, which is what led her to be the Dark One. And I think that's what I'm really wanting to see with Emma's story. And I think we could even argue that it was part of Rumple's story, that he chose to do things that led him down to being the Dark One. Because I feel like Once Upon a Time doesn't like negate free will. And I really want to see like how choice is going to play in Emma. Like there was a struggle, but there was also a specific choice to do things that are kind of horrific, to be honest. So I'm curious how that all comes out in the end.
Oh, yeah. One of the biggest themes of Once Upon a Time from the very beginning, season one, Regina, her story, we saw this, that evil is not born, it's made. There are reasons why somebody turns evil. And I think that even with the Dark One, who is the most evil creature we've ever seen, that had to be created some way, and I think it's always going to come down to choice. I mean, we've seen that in both Rumple and Regina's storylines in the past, and even, people like Xelena, everyone has a choice, and the choices they make determine which path they're going to walk down. And I think it's so interesting that essentially the Dark One and Merlin are the same type of person. They have the same exact power. They both drink from the Holy Grail. Yet the choices they make determine the kind of person that they eventually
Right.
become.
And even just saying Selena there too, I think is a really good example. Like, 'cause we've talked on a couple episodes on how Zelina just seems to be completely like a psychopath, like in all seriousness. But within her psychopathness, she consistently, I feel, freely chooses to do the horrific constantly. Like, I mean, that's probably part of her personality disorder, but she also absolutely chooses to do the things that, you know, she has a persecution complex and then chooses things that are like really horrible options.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, even though she is completely crazy, there's a reason why she's crazy. I mean, a lot of crappy things have happened to her. And of course, she's always dealt with her own issues with having jealousy. And that's kind of thrown her down this path of where she has ended up now. But there are reasons. It's not like she was just born crazy and she's crazy for crazy's sake. So I've always liked that Once Upon a Time has chosen to give the villains this backstory because it makes it easier, one, to relate to them when they do turn good, like in Regina's case, but also to just understand where they're coming from to begin with, which I think is always important when you have a villain. You don't want somebody who's just evil because what they're doing isn't going to make any sense. If they have an objective and you understand why they have that objective, it makes the story so much more compelling.
Yeah, I've always kind of thought of Zelina as a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like
Exactly.
she always feels like people choose Regina over her, but she repeatedly chooses herself over everyone else. It's like if she would just take the time and take a side and stand for something other than whatever it is she thinks she wants, she could very easily have people on her side. Like they've given her chances before, and every time they do, like today, she stabs him in the back and does her own thing and, you know, tries to get her end in the wrong way. So if Zelina could just like grasp that she's causing as much trouble as she's receiving, like I feel like she could still to this day not be quite so nuts, but she won't because she's Zelina and that's how she functions.
Right.
Can we also add she is the most unpregnant looking pregnant woman ever?
Yeah, most
That
definitely.
is true. I mean, if for no other reason, like looking at show titles that are coming up, like she looks very unpregnant to me. Like, how are we
Yes.
gonna get her to being more pregnant? And then do we have the little green baby who wants to go live in the woods? Who even knows what this is gonna be? You know, it's just so horrible to think about. But yeah, no, I'm just curious where they're going with her, because I think she kind of, like, to me, it's like a story that is getting lost in all of this of what they're doing.
Yeah, she keeps popping up momentarily just to kind of remind us that she's there, which I don't know. I think that they have a long con down the line because clearly she is a sense of like she's an antagonist. There's something that she's something that's keeping Regina and Robin not necessarily from being together, but you know, she's a point of tension to say the least. And it's going to come to a head eventually, but until then, yeah, she seems random sometimes. But
Yeah,
before.
and this is her first season as a regular, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I
I
think
think
you're
this
right.
is I think this is Rebecca Mader's first season as a regular, not
Mm-hmm.
just as a recurring character. So clearly they've got something brewing. Like you
Yeah.
don't cast someone at, you know, and bring them back on as a series regular and not have some real crazy coming. So I'm sure there's probably something coming up that Zelina has been brewing all along.
Definitely. And before we get into more of Zelina's story and what she ends up doing to our heroes, the last thing I wanted to talk about with this whole forging of Excalibur thing is that Nimue breaks the sword so that it cannot be used. And she becomes the Dark One and turns into this sort of green, weird-looking creature. And she's kind of got like rumpled skin, which is interesting because Emma, even in the present storybook, does not have that shine to her skin. And I wonder if, like Brittany says here, so clearly Emma has not done anything so awful that she's turned colors, right? We saw it a little, but she hasn't crossed over to that point yet. So very interesting. But what did you think of Nimue's new, I don't even know what to call it.
My first instinct was, she's Elphaba, because it was like she turned green, man. It just didn't, it didn't quite grasp me as Dark One makeup. It crossed it, it my first instinct was, she's in all black with a hood, and is her face is now green. So it wasn't great, but not awful either. It was just kind of there.
It worked for me though, because there was like a sparkly element to it, and I feel like Rumple, when he's in the Dark One, like get up, it's very sparkly looking. So I felt like that aspect of it was there. So it was different than Zelina Green, I would say. So
And it was definitely different from Rumple's color too. And I don't know, I just thought she looked really badass. I was glad that they decided to do that.
the contacts that she was wearing, like whatever they did to her eyes, kept creeping me out. I was like, stop looking at me.
Yeah, that was intense. All right, so we get to Arthur's court, and the heroes go in search of Excalibur from Arthur, and we think that Selina's going to help them, but she ends up, like we said, stabbing all of them in the back. I was okay. Maybe I'm just naive. I was a little surprised because I was like, if, like you were saying, Kristen, if she just played along, if she just did the right thing, then they would have trusted her and she would have gotten everything that she wanted anyway, because Regina's trying so hard to become a better person that she's not going to double cross Selina. And so when Selina just decided to go help Arthur anyway, I was just annoyed.
Yeah, I almost picked Regina's line for my favorite when she says, I didn't think she had it in her, but Zelina hasn't screwed us yet. And it's exactly that. Like they think that they finally have got Zelina on their side. Like she's finally gonna, join the cause and help them get back to, what they need to get back to. And then right before it she finally, crosses that line and does the right thing, she does the wrong one. It's just, she always gets close, but then she, does her own
And
thing.
then Snow White is there, and I'm going, oh, do not fall for that.
Yep,
Do
me
not
too.
fall for that. The I'm going into premature labor trick. It is the oldest one ever. I'm
Yeah,
like,
I'm
stop
going, no,
yelling
Snow.
at the
No.
TV screen.
I was like, yeah. So that really bothered me. And then part of me is wondering if what, Emma clearly is going to turn dark, unless it's all some kind of weird trick, which would be like, if it's all an illusion, would be amazing. But I was thinking about what would make Emma, now that she's gone through everything she's gone through with Merlin, choose to turn dark or do something. And I thought what you would do to Emma is either threaten her parents or threaten Henry, in particular Henry. And if it was the choice of, killing to protect Henry and her parents or remaining light, like game over, she would have chosen to protect either of them. So I'm wondering, because I mean, clearly Snow is being, they had her in the clutches. Like, I just wonder if Emma's gonna, this is what makes her tip over, is something to do with that, or Henry coming into the picture here.
I feel like, though, if you're doing it for that reason, can you really become the Dark One?
I look at it this way. I mean, Nimue certainly had, I mean, this is the guy that was absolutely out to kill her, was burning villages everywhere. I mean, this was not like a real moral guy. Like, clearly society was going to be the vet, for the better if Vortigern wasn't around, and yet that was enough to turn her dark. So I feel like it would be the same thing for Emma.
True, true.
Random thought before we run so too far away from the Emma turning colors thing. We have never seen the Emma we have in storybook now in Camelot And in Storybrooke, you never turn colors. Like, gold was never gold. So I wonder if before this is out, if we will see Emma in full Dark One skin and everything in Camelot before the spell is cast for them all to be sent back to Storybrooke.
Good point.
Like, she's changed a lot in Storybrooke, but it's just surface stuff. It's not the skin, but we don't see that in Storybrooke. So I'm curious. We might yet see her in full regalia.
Yeah, good point. I didn't think about that. Now, we see Arthur with Merlin's name on the sword end of it, and there are now two names. Okay, we have the name on the dagger and we have the name on the sword. So when they rejoin, what does that mean? And I think this is really interesting because, like we said, they both drank from the cup. So they're both essentially have the same power, just one uses it for dark, one uses it for light. When the powers join, I feel like we're talking about like Captain Planet or something.
I was just about to start singing.
Yeah.
When their powers combine. Okay, I'm done.
Like you're going to be able to control both of them essentially. And I just wonder, like, could we see some sort of weird merge of like the Dark One and Merlin and how that's going to work if Emma is like continues to be the face of that being, if she will have both light and dark in her? And I don't know, I was going to like weird places in my brain with this.
Well, and I'm wondering how the tether spell works. Like with the Dark One, she is required to do whatever the person with the dagger commands her to do, but she's the Dark One. Merlin is not the Dark One, yet is tethered to the sword. So I'm wondering if he can be ordered to do like dark, horrible things despite not being the Dark One. Like it almost seems like there should be a line that he won't have to cross because he uses light magic, not dark magic.
Yeah, I don't
It's
know.
just
It's hard.
strange. It was just, yeah, it was just
Yeah.
something that
It would
popped
be
in my head, and I
interesting.
was like, I wonder if at some point there, Arthur might, because he's only asked him to get rid of them or, like stop them from hurting me. He hasn't asked him to do anything like that crosses the line yet. So I'm wondering if maybe there will be a point where he won't have to submit to Arthur, and then won't the then the sword will lose his name or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's interesting too that you're talking about Emma being, tethered and all of that. And we see that she gets the necklace and she kind of takes that in hand and it reminds her of Hook and of the love that people feel for her, and it helps keep her sane, essentially. And she sort of battles mentally with Nimue. And this scene was so incredibly good, so incredibly well acted. And I think that the power that she had in her voice when she was like, "No, I've never not been nothing. Like, I am somebody, I'm my own person." And she kind of beats Emma, or she beats Nimue and decides not to kill Merlin, thank goodness, because I have a feeling we kind of need him. And it was such a strong moment that I was like, wow, this is the first time in a long time, I think, that Once Upon a Time has kind of given me goosebumps. I mean, most of the time it's like this nice, easy show to watch, and I like it, but it's not anything that you tune in week to week where you're like, oh my God, what is going to happen next? How is people's lives going to be destroyed next? Like The Walking Dead. I'm still mad at that. But Once Upon a Time is fairly fun and family friendly. And when Emma was battling Nimue, I was like, wow, this is kind of a whole other level for Once Upon a Time.
I mean, Emma was ferocious in that scene.
Yeah.
Like you saw the raw power that is Emma Swan and the Savior in that moment. Like, Dark One or not, she is chock full of the power to do what she wants and what she needs. And in that moment, she overcame centuries of dark power to say, no, I have my own power and I'm not doing this. And it was just, oh, it was so well done. I also got chills. Like, it was a very cool moment.
And it makes it so interesting considering we know where she ends up in Storybrooke. You know, we know that she succumbs to the Dark One power. And when we jump forward, you know, Emma remembers that Arthur told her not to do this when he spoke to her in the movie theater when she was a kid, but she has all the parts now. She has the dagger, she has the spark, she has the sword. She puts it together. Excalibur is whole. Now what? What is she going to do? And we have a piece of feedback that I wanted to read. And this is something that I was thinking of during the episode as well. And it comes from on Twitter at Kimmy92279, who says, "Keep telling myself it must be some elaborate plan of Emma's and she must not really be evil." And Brittany adds in, "I'm not sure what exact moment this references. But discuss, is Emma really evil or does she have some master plan that we don't know about?" She personally thinks it would be a cheap way out, but I kind of like the idea that Emma is perhaps strong enough to fight the Dark One power because if you remember, Merlin mentioned something about maybe once in a very great while there is somebody strong enough who can hold the Dark One power in themselves but also hold it at bay. And maybe Emma will be that person.
See, when he said that, and maybe this is just because my brain is my brain, and I always think that there's, you know, I thought of Henry. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I'm thinking clearly Emma is struggling with this. She's been struggling with the darkness. It's tried to take her over, and I don't think that she's going to be able to defeat it. Somebody cast this curse to send them back to Storybrooke. And I feel like she has to have become the Dark One to treat people like Henry the way she did and to do what she's done in Storybrooke to Hook. Like, I know she needs to sell it there, even if she's not truly the Dark One. For some reason, she's trying to sell to them that she is. But I think she is the Dark One in Storybrooke. I don't think they're gonna like peel back a layer and ta-da, Emma never really embraced it. She's just been fooling you all. Like, I don't think that's what's gonna happen. But when Merlin said, you know, there is some, you know, there will be someone at some point or whatever, that can take on the darkness and basically overcome it. My first instinct was Henry. He's been raised by the ultimate light and the ultimate dark. Like, he's had two mothers, and Regina was darkest of dark, and he's seen what that can do. And Emma was the lightest of light magic, and he saw what that can do. And he's seen someone who was dark become good, and he's seen the power that that has. So, if anyone could overcome the temptation of darkness, I feel like Henry could.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, he really does, of everyone, I think, clearly have the purest of hearts, so I would agree with that.
And I do think that Emma has embraced the dark power because clearly she is changing and she's done some things that aren't so great. But I also wonder if she could potentially be strong enough to come back from that. Whereas, you know, like we've seen with Rumple, once he got a hold of that power, he just did not want to give it up for anything. And I wonder if Emma will be strong enough to find something to hold on to that will allow her to come back from that. But I really like that idea of Henry being able to hold that power within him, knowing that he can go either way, I guess. Like, he's lived both lives. Like, he's been with Regina for so long and saw what she could do, but saw her come back from that. And then on the flip side, and sort of in the opposite order, was with Emma, who was the savior and then eventually turned into the Dark One. And so he kind of has like both sides of that coin in his mind, and he can see it. And I mean, what a way to take the show, what a direction to take the show in, because Henry kind of is the hero of heroes. He's the purest of them all, and it would be nice to see him take on that role and that power.
I mean, I would love to see a magical Henry. Like, can you imagine the like childlike wonder of having some magical ability and controlling it. Like, I can just see him in that role. Like, it, no, I would love it because I've always been a Henry fan. Like, I really love what they've done with Henry. And, you know, God knows where they're going with him at this point because we saw what happened with the whole Violet thing. But it would be interesting. And I think he would be the only one at this point who could convince Emma that he could handle the power. Like, if at some point Emma had to give it up or die or something, and he said, "You can give it to me, I can handle this," I feel like he might be the only one who could convince her to not just like give in and let it take her over or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a comment from Hypebol on the recap that Brittany posted. This is from Ravenclaw 1991. Kristen, would you like to take this?
I would be happy to. She says, "I, like most people, accurately predicted that Nimue was going to be the first Dark One, but they threw me off for a second because they said he, and I thought I was wrong. So when Merlin said it wasn't a he, I started screaming because I was right. I really liked how Merlin admitted that he was supposed to be there for Arthur, and that's why Arthur is bad. It makes sense. If he hadn't been turned into a tree, Arthur would be the king he should be. Maybe we'll see that happen before this Camelot arc is over." Yeah, I mean, I totally agree.
I would love
Because
for Arthur to be redeemed.
it. Yes.
Karen's waiting for it.
Yeah, because he is definitely acting way crazy sauce. I agree. Very paranoid.
And then we have another tweet. Laura, would you like to take this one?
It's from Mr. Elsie Chuka, I think. And it says, is there anyone else who dreams with Yuzma from Emperor's New Grooves in Once ABC? So I have not seen the Emperor's New Groove, or I saw it so long ago, I'm having trouble remembering it. So anybody else have anything to add with that one?
I'm kind of in the same boat, honestly.
Like, I remember it, but it's like, not one that I
And
love so much that I had to rewatch it. You know what I'm saying?
yeah, and I know who she is, and she seems to be crazy, and people definitely kind of gravitate toward her. You know, like there's some villains that, like for me, it's Hades. You know, they're evil, but you kind of give them a pass because they're also sort of hilarious and amazing. I feel like she's one of those, and people would be really into seeing her. Although she is kind of intense. It'd be interesting to see her in a live action. Granted, we did see Cruella, who is also fairly intense.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I know I've never seen it. What I know about Yzma, I know from memes
There you go.
and
Yeah. I
GIFs.
mean, yeah.
So, like, I know how snarky and ridiculous and just out there she can be, but yeah, I don't really know much about the character beyond just what I've seen in GIF form, so it'd be interesting. I mean, definitely wouldn't be a dull moment with her around.
Yes. Okay. So that basically sums up this episode for us. Next week we have the supersized double episode. It's 8 and 9, titled "Birth in the Bear King." Those are two separate ones. Birth is 8. The Bear King is 9. And like you were saying, Laura, birth as in Zelina's birth, because
Yeah.
she doesn't seem too pregnant.
She's the most unpregnant
Or
looking pregnant woman ever.
Is it the birth of Emma the Dark One?
Oh, could be.
Dun dun dun. I mean, it could be. We don't know, but
Yeah.
it could be.
Yeah, definitely interesting. But we shall be back to recap those. I don't think we've decided whether we're going to do them together or potentially separate, because I think we have Thanksgiving hiatus. After that, we're going to skip a week. So we might end up doing 8 and then wait a week and do 9, but we will let you guys know if that's the case. Until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.